camping gear, including backpacks, hunting cloaks, provisions, and weapons. He produced a map of the country east of Lee, but it was poorly detailed because the lands were so little known. The lowlands of Cleet, which spread from the highlands eastward to the Black Oaks, was a dismal, treacherous moor. Yet on the map it was no more than a blank white area with the name written in. The Black Oaks stood out prominently, a dense mass of forest land running from the Rainbow Lake southward, standing like a great wall between Lee and the Anar. Menyon discussed briefly with the Veilmen his knowledge of the terrain and weather conditions at this time of the year. But like the map, his information was sketchy. Most of what the travelers would find could not be accurately anticipated, and the unexpected could be most dangerous. By midnight, the three were in bed, their preparations for the journey to the Anar complete. In the room he was sharing with Flick, Shay lay back wearily in the softness of the bedding and studied for a moment the darkness beyond his open window. The night had clouded over, the sky a mass of heavy, rolling blackness that settled ominously about the misty highlands. Gone was the heat of the day, blown east by the cooling night breezes, and throughout the sleeping city there was a peaceful solitude. In the bed next to him, Flick was already asleep, his breathing heavy and regular. Shay watched him thoughtfully. His own head was heavy and his body weary from the struggle to reach Lee, yet he remained awake. He was beginning to realize for the first time the truth about his predicament. The flight to reach Menyon was only the first step in a journey that might very possibly go on for years. Even if they managed to reach the Anar safely, Shay knew that eventually they would be forced to run again. The search to find them would continue until the warlock lord was destroyed, or Shay was dead. Until then, there would be no going back to the Vale, to the home and father he had left, and wherever they were, their safety would last only until the winged hunters found them once again. The truth was terrifying. In the silent darkness, Shay Ohmsford was alone with his fear, and deep within himself, he fought back against a rising knot of terror. He took a long time, finally, to fall asleep. It was a dull, sunless day that followed, a day damp and chilling to human flesh and bone. Shay and his two companions found it devoid of any warmth and comfort as they journeyed eastward through the misty highlands of Lee and began a slow descent toward the cheerless climate of the lowlands beyond. There was no talking among them as they hiked in single file down the narrow footpaths which wound tediously about gray, hulking boulders and clumps of dying, formless brush. Menyon led, his keen eyes carefully picking out the often obscure traces of a trail, his stride long and relaxed as he moved almost gracefully over the gradually roughening terrain. Across his lean back he carried a small pack to which he had attached a great ash bow and arrows. In addition, beneath the pack and fastened to his body by a long leather strap was the ancient sword which his father had given him when he had reached the age of manhood, the sword which was the birthright of the Prince of Lee. Its cold, gray iron glimmered faintly in the dim light, and Shay, who followed several places back, found himself wondering if it was at all like the fabled sword of Shannara. His elven eyebrows lifted quizzically as he tried to peer into the endless gloom of the land ahead. Nothing seemed alive. It was a dead land for dead things, and the living were trespassers here. Not a very stimulating idea. He grinned faintly to himself as he forced his mind to turn to other matters. Flick brought up the rear, his sturdy back bearing the bulk of the provisions that would have to sustain them until they were through the lowlands of Cleet and the forbidding Black Oaks. Once they had gotten that far, if they got that far, they would be forced to buy or trade for food from the few scattered inhabitants of the country beyond, or as a last resort seek nourishment from the land itself, a prospect that Flick did not particularly relish. Although he felt somewhat more secure in his mind now that Menyon was genuinely interested in helping them on this journey, he was nevertheless still unconvinced of the Highlanders' ability to do so. The events of their last trip were still fresh in his mind, and he wanted no part of another hair-raising experience like that one. The first day wore on quickly as the three traveled past the boundaries of the Kingdom of Lee, and by nightfall had reached the fringes of the dismal lowlands of Cleet. They found shelter for the night in a small vale under the negligible protection of a few scruffy trees and some heavy brush. The dampness of the mist had soaked their clothing completely through, and the chill of the descending night left them shivering with cold. A brief attempt was made to start a fire in an effort to gain some small warmth and dryness, but the wood in the area was so thoroughly saturated with moisture that it was impossible to get it to burn. Eventually they gave up on the fire and settled for some cold rations while wrapped in blankets, which had carefully been waterproofed at the start of the journey. Little was said, because no one felt much like talking beyond mumbling curses upon the general weather conditions. There was no sound from the darkness beyond where they sat huddled within the brush. It was a penetrating stillness that prodded the mind with sudden, unexpected apprehension, forcing it to listen in a frightened effort to catch some faint, reassuring rustle of life. But there was only the silence and the blackness, and not even the wisp of a brief wind touched their chilled faces as they lay quietly in the blankets. Eventually the weariness of the day's march stole over them, and one by one they dropped uneasily off to sleep. The second and third day were unimaginably worse than the first. It rained the entire time, a slow, chilling drizzle that soaked first the clothing, then penetrated into the skin and bone, and finally reached the very nerve centers, so that the only feeling the weary body would permit was one of thorough, discomforting wetness. The air was damp and cold in the day, dropping off to a near freeze at night. Everything around the three travelers seemed totally beaten down by this lingering coldness. What little brush and small foliage could be seen was twisted and dying, formless clumps of wood and withered leaves that silently waited to crumble and disappear altogether. No human or animal lived here. Even the smallest rodent would have been swallowed up and consumed by the clutching softness of an earth seeped through with the chilling dampness of long, sunless, lifeless days and nights. Nothing moved. Nothing stirred as the three walked eastward through shapeless country where there was no trail. No hint that anyone or anything had ever passed that way before, or would ever do so again. The sun never appeared during their march, no faint trace of its direct rays flickering downward to show that somewhere beyond this dead, forgotten land was a world of life. Whether it was the perpetual mist or the heavy clouds or a combination of both that so completely blotted out the sky remained an unanswered question. Their only world was that cheerless, hateful gray land through which they walked. By the fourth day they began to despair. Even though there had been no further sign of the winged hunters of the warlock lord, and it appeared that any pursuit had been abandoned, the possibility offered little solace as the hours dragged by, and the silence grew deeper, the land more sullen. Even Menyon's great spirit began to waver, and doubt wormed its stealthy way into his usually confident mind. He began to wonder if they had lost the direction, if perhaps they had even traveled in a circle. He knew the land would never tell them that once lost in this bleak country, they were lost forever. Shay and Flick felt the fear even more deeply. They knew nothing of the lowlands and lacked the hunter's skill and instinct that Menyon possessed. They relied completely on him, but sensed that something was wrong, even though the Highlander had purposely kept silent about his own doubts so as not to worry them. The hours passed, and the cold and the wet and the hateful deadness of the land remained unchanged. They felt their last shred of confidence in one another and in themselves begin to slip slowly, agonizingly away. Finally, as the fifth day of the journey drew to a close, and still the lowland bleakness stretched on with no visible sign of the desperately sought-after black oaks, Shea wearily called a halt to the endless march and dropped heavily to the ground, his questioning eyes on the Prince of Lee. Menyon shrugged and looked absently at the misty lowlands about them, his handsome face drawn with the chill of the air.
"I won't lie to you," he murmured. "I can't be sure that we have kept our sense of direction. We may have traveled in a circle. We may even be hopelessly lost."
Flick dropped his pack disgustedly and looked at his brother with his own special I-told-you-so look. Shea glanced at him and turned hurriedly back to Menyon.
"I can't believe we are completely lost. Isn't there any way we can get our bearings?"
"I'm open to suggestions."
His friend smiled humorlessly, stretching as he too dropped his pack to the rough ground and sat down beside the brooding Flick.
"What's the trouble, old Flick? Have I gotten you into it again?"
Flick glanced over at him angrily, but looking into the gray eyes, he quickly reconsidered his dislike of the man. There was genuine concern there, and even a trace of sadness at the thought that he had failed them. With rare affection, Flick reached over and placed a comforting hand on the other's shoulder, nodding silently. Suddenly Shea leaped up and flung off his own pack, hastily rummaging through its contents.
"The stones can help us," he cried.
For a moment the other two looked blankly at him, and then in sudden understanding rose expectantly to their feet. A moment later Shea produced the small leather pouch with its precious contents. They all stared at the worn container in mute anticipation that the elf stones would at last prove their value, that they would somehow aid them in escaping the wasteland of Cleet. Eagerly, Shea opened the drawstrings and carefully dropped the three small blue stones into his upturned palm. They lay there twinkling dimly as the three watched and waited.
"Hold them up, Shea," urged Menyon after a moment. "Perhaps they need the light."
The veilman did as he was told, watching the blue stones anxiously. Nothing happened. He waited a moment longer before lowering his hand. Al-Anon had cautioned him against use of the elf stones except in the gravest of emergencies. Perhaps the stones would only come to his aid in special situations. He began to despair. Whatever the case, he was faced with the hard fact that he had no idea how the stones were to be used. He looked desperately at his friends.
"Well, try something else,"
exclaimed Menyon heatedly. Shea took the stones between his hands and rubbed them together sharply, then shook them and cast them like dice. Still, nothing happened. Slowly he retrieved them from the damp earth and carefully wiped them clean. Their deep blue color seemed to draw him to them, and he peered closely into their clear, glass-like core, as if somehow the answer might be found there.
"Maybe you should talk to them or something."
Flick's voice trailed off hopefully. A mental picture of Al-Anon's dark face, bowed and locked in deep concentration, flashed sharply in Shea's mind. Perhaps the secret of the elf stones could be unlocked in a different way, he thought suddenly. Holding them out in his open palm, the little veilman closed his eyes and concentrated his thoughts on reaching into the deep blueness, searching for the power that they so desperately needed. Silently, he urged the elf stones to help them. Long moments passed, seemingly hours. He opened his eyes and the three friends watched and waited while the stones rested in Shea's palm, their blue gleam dull in the darkness and damp of the mist. Then, With ferocious suddenness, they flared up in a blinding blue glare that caused the travelers to reel back from the brightness, shielding their unprotected eyes. So powerful was the aura that Shane nearly dropped the small gems in astonishment. The sharp glow became steadily brighter, lighting up the dead land about them as the sun had never been able to do. The brightness intensified from the deep blue to a bright blue so dazzling that the awestruck watchers were actually hypnotized. It grew, steadied, and abruptly shot forward like a huge beacon, traveling to their left, cutting effortlessly through the mist-covered grayness to rest at last, some hundreds, perhaps thousands of yards ahead upon the great gnarled boles of the ancient black oaks. The light held for one brief moment, and then it was gone. The gray mist returned with its chill dampness, and the three small blue stones gleamed quietly as they had before. Menyon recovered quickly, clapping Shay sharply on the back and grinning broadly. In one quick motion, he had his pack back in place and was ready to travel, his eyes already scanning the now invisible spot through which the vision of the black oaks had appeared. Shay hastily returned the elf stones to the pouch, and the Veilmen strapped on their packs. Not a word was spoken as they walked rapidly in the direction the beacon had flashed, each watching eagerly for the long-expected forest. Gone was the chill of the gray darkness and slow drizzle of the past 5 days. Gone was the despair they had felt so strongly only minutes before. There was only the conviction that escape from these dreaded lowlands was at last at hand. They did not question, did not doubt the vision the stones had revealed to them. The Black Oaks was the most dangerous forest in the Southland, but at this particular moment, it seemed a haven of hope compared to the land of Cleet. The time seemed endless as they pushed ahead. It could have been hours or perhaps only minutes later when suddenly the graying mist grudgingly gave way to huge moss-covered trunks which rose hulkingly into the air to be lost in the haze above. The exhausted trio halted together, their tired eyes gazing joyfully on the cheerless monsters that stood evenly, endlessly before them, their great mass an impenetrable wall of damp, scarred bark on wide, deep-rooted bases that had stood there for countless ages of man, and would very likely be there until the destruction of the land itself. It was an awesome sight, even in the dim light of the misty lowlands, and the watchers felt the undeniable presence of a life force in those woods so incredibly ancient that it almost commanded a deep, grudging respect for its years. It was as if they had stepped into another age, another world, and all that stood so silently before them had the magic of an enticingly dangerous fairy tale. "The stones were right," murmured Shay softly, a slow smile spreading over his tired but happy face. He breathed deeply with relief and flashed a quick grin. "The Black Oaks," pronounced Menyon in admiration. "Here we go again," sighed Flick. Chapter 6 They spent that night camped within the protective fringes of the black oaks in a small clearing, sheltered by the great trees and dense shrubbery which blotted out the dreariness of the lowlands of Cleet less than 50 yards to the west. The heavy mist dissipated within the forest, and it was possible to look skyward to the magnificent canopy of interlocking boughs and leaves several hundred feet above them. Where there had been no sign of life in the deathly lowlands, within the giant oaks, the mingled sounds of insect and animal life whispered through the night. It was pleasant to hear living things again, and the three weary travelers felt at ease for the first time in days. But lingering in the back of their minds was the memory of their prior journey to this deceptively peaceful haven, when they had been lost for several long days and nearly devoured by the ravenous wolves that prowled deep within its confines. Moreover,
the tales of unfortunate travelers who had attempted to pass through this same forest were too numerous to be disregarded. However, the young Southlanders felt reasonably secure at the edge of the Black Oaks and gratefully made preparations to start a fire. Wood was plentiful and dry. They stripped to the skin and hung their soggy garments on a line near the small blaze. A meal was quickly prepared, the first hot one in 5 days and devoured in minutes. The floor of the forest was soft and smooth, a comfortable bed compared to the dampened earth of the lowlands. As they lay quietly on their backs, gazing skyward at the gently swaying treetops, the bright light of the fire seemed to shoot upward in faint streaks of orange that gave the impression of an altar burning in some great sanctuary. The light danced and glittered against the rough bark and the soft green moss that clung in dark patches to the massive trees. The forest insects maintained their steady hum in contentment. Occasionally one would fly into the flames of the fire and extinguish its brief life with a dazzling flash. Once or twice they heard the rustle of some small animal outside the light of the fire, watching from the protective blackness. After a while, Menyon rolled over on his side and looked curiously at Shay.
"What is the source of the power of those stones, Shay? Can they grant any wish?"
"I'm still not sure." His voice trailed off and he shook his head vaguely. Shay continued to lie motionless on his back, staring upward for a few moments as he thought back on the events of that afternoon. He realized that none of them had spoken of the elf stones since the mysterious vision of the Black Oaks in that awesome display of incomprehensible power. He glanced over at Flick, who was watching him closely.
"I don't think that I have that much control over them," he announced abruptly. "It was almost as if they made the decision."
He paused and then added absently, "I don't think I can control them." Menyon nodded thoughtfully and lay back again. Flick cleared his throat.
"What's the difference? They got us out of that dismal swamp, didn't they?"
Menyon glanced sharply at Flick and shrugged.
"It might be helpful to know when we can count on that kind of support, don't you think?"
He breathed deeply and clasped his hands behind his head, his keen gaze shifting to the fire at his feet. Flick stirred uneasily across from him, glancing from Menyon to his brother and back again. Shay said nothing, his gaze focused on some imaginary point overhead. Long moments passed before the Highlander spoke again.
"Well, at least we've made it this far," he declared cheerfully. "Now for the next leg of the trip."
He sat up and began to sketch a quick map of the area in the dry earth. Shay and Flick sat up with him and watched quietly.
"Here we are," Menyon pointed to a spot on the dirt map representing the fringe of the Black Oaks.
"At least that's where I think we are," he added quickly.
"To the north is the Mist Marsh, and farther north of that, the Rainbow Lake, out of which runs the Silver River east to the Anar Forests. Our best bet is to travel north tomorrow until we reach the edge of the Mist Marsh. Then we'll skirt the edge of the swamp."
He traced a long line.
"And come out on the other side of the Black Oaks. From there we can travel due north until we run into the Silver River, and that should get us safely to the Anar."
He paused and looked over at the other two. Neither seemed to be happy with the plan.
"What's the matter?" he asked in bewilderment. "The plan is designed to get us past the Black Oaks without forcing us to go directly through them, which was the cause of all the trouble the last time we were here. Don't forget those wolves are still in there somewhere."
Shane nodded slowly and frowned.
"It's not the general plan," he began hesitantly, "but we've heard tales of the Mist Marsh."
Menyon clapped his hand to his forehead in amazement.
"Oh, no.
Not the old wives' tale about a mist wraith that lurks on the edges of the marsh, waiting to devour stray travelers. Don't tell me you believe that. That's fine. Coming from you, Flick blazed up angrily. I suppose you've forgotten who it was that told us how safe the Black Oaks were just before that last trip. All right, soothed the lean hunter. I'm not saying that this is a safe part of the country, and that some very strange creatures don't inhabit these woods. But no one has ever seen this so-called creature of the marsh, and we have seen the wolves. Which do you choose?
I suppose that your plan is the best one, interjected Shay hastily. But I would prefer it if we could cut as far east as possible while traveling through the forest to avoid as much of the mist marsh as possible.
Agreed. Agreed, exclaimed Minion. But it may prove to be a bit difficult when we haven't seen the sun in 3 days and can't really be sure which way is east.
Climb a tree, Flick suggested casually.
Climb a... stuttered the other in unabashed amazement.
Why, of course. Why didn't I think of that? I'll just climb 200 feet of slick, damp, moss-covered tree bark with my bare hands and feet.
He shook his head in mock wonderment.
Sometimes you appall me.
He glanced wearily over at Shay for understanding, but the Veilman had bounded excitedly to his brother's side.
"You brought the climbing equipment?" he demanded in astonishment.
When the other nodded, he clapped him hardly on his broad back.
"Special boots and gloves and rope," he explained quickly to a bewildered Prince of Lee. "Flick is the best climber in the Vale, and if anyone can make it up one of these monsters, he can."
Minion shook his head uncomprehendingly.
The boots and gloves are coated with special substance just before use that makes the surface rough enough to grip even damp, mossy bark. He'll be able to climb one of these oaks tomorrow and check the position of the sun.
Flick grinned smugly and nodded.
Yes, indeed. Wonder of wonders.
Minion shook his head and looked over at the stocky Veilman. Even the slow-witted are starting to think.
My friends, we may make it yet.
When they awoke the following morning, the forest was still dark, with only faint traces of daylight filtering through at the tops of the great oaks. A thin mist had drifted in off the lowlands, which, when glimpsed from the edges of the forest, appeared as sunless and dismal as ever. It was cold in the woods. Not the damp, penetrating chill of the lowland country, but rather the brisk, crisp cool of a forest's early morn. They ate a quick breakfast, and then Flick prepared to climb one of the towering oaks. He pulled on the heavy, flexible boots and gloves, which Shay then coated with a thick, pasty substance from a small container. Minion looked on quizzically, but his curiosity changed to astonishment as the stocky Veilman grasped the base of the great tree, and with a dexterity that belied both his bulky size and the difficulty of the task, proceeded to climb rapidly toward the summit. His strong limbs carried him upward through the tangle of heavy branches, and the climbing became slower and more difficult. He was briefly lost from sight upon reaching the topmost branches, then reappeared, hastening down the smooth trunk to rejoin his friends. Quickly the climbing gear was packed, and the group proceeded in a northeasterly direction. Based on Flick's report of the sun's present position, their chosen route should bring them out at a point along the east edge of the mist marsh. Minion believed that the forest trek could be completed in 1 day. It was now early morning, and they were determined to be through the Black Oaks before darkness fell. So they marched steadily, at times rapidly, in single file. The keen-eyed Minion led, picking out the best path, relying heavily on his sense of direction in the semi-darkness. Shay followed close behind him, and Flick brought up the rear, glancing occasionally over his shoulder into the still forests. They stopped only 3 times to rest and once more for a brief lunch, each time quickly resuming their march. They spoke infrequently, but the talk was light-hearted and cheerful. The day wore quickly away, and soon the first signs of nightfall were visible. Still, the forest stretched on before them with no indication of a break in the great trees. Worse than this, a heavy, graying mistiness was once again seeping into view in gradually thickening amounts. But this was a new kind of mist. It lacked the inconsistency of the lowland mist. This was an almost smoke-like substance that one could actually feel clinging to the body and clothes, gripping in its own peculiarly distasteful fashion. It felt strangely like the clutching of hundreds of small, clammy, chilled hands seeking to pull the body down, and the three travelers felt an unmistakable revulsion at its insistent touch. Mennion indicated that the heavy, fog-like substance was from the mist marsh, and they were very close to the end of the forest. Eventually the mist grew so heavy that it was impossible for the three to see more than a few feet. Mennion slowed his pace to a crawl because of the increasingly poor visibility, and they remained close to each other to avoid separation. By this time the day was so far gone that even without the mist, the forest would have appeared almost black. But with the added dimness caused by the swirling wall of heavy moisture, it was nearly impossible to pick out any sort of path. It was almost as if the three were suspended in a limbo world, where only the solidity of the invisible ground on which they trod offered any evidence of reality. It finally became so difficult to see that Mennion instructed the other two to bind themselves together and to him by a length of rope to prevent separation. This was quickly done, and the slow march resumed. Mennion knew that they had to be very near the mist marsh and carefully peered into the grayness ahead in an effort to catch a glimpse of a breakthrough. Even so, when at last he did reach the edge of the marshland bordering the north fringes of the Black Oaks, he did not realize what had happened until he had already stepped knee-deep into the thick green waters. The chill, death-like clutching of the mud beneath, coupled with his surprise, caused him to slip farther down, and only his quick warning saved Shay and Flick from a similar fate. Responding to his cry, they hauled in on the rope that bound them together and hastily pulled their comrade from the bog and certain death. The sullen, slime-covered waters of the great swamp covered only thinly the bottomless mud beneath, which lacked the rapid suction of quicksand, but accomplished the same result in a slightly longer time span. Anything or anyone caught in its grip was doomed to a slow death by suffocation in an immeasurable abyss. For untold ages its silent surface had fooled unwary creatures into attempting to cross, or to skirt, or perhaps only to test its mirrorless waters. And the decayed remains of all lay buried together somewhere beneath its placid face. The three travelers stood silently on its banks, looking at it and experiencing inwardly the horror of its dark secret. Even Mennion Lee shuddered as he remembered its brief, clutching invitation to him to share the fate of so many others. For one spellbound second, the dead paraded as shadows before them, and were gone. "What happened?" exclaimed Shay suddenly, his voice breaking the silence with deafening sharpness. "We should have avoided this swamp." Mennion looked upward and about for a few seconds, and shook his head. "We've come out too far to the west. We'll have to follow the edge of the bog around to the east until we can break free from this mist and the Black Oaks." He paused and considered the time of day. "I'm not spending the night in this place," Flick declared vehemently, anticipating the other's query. "I'd rather walk all night and most of tomorrow, and probably the next day." Their quick decision was to continue along the edge of the mist marsh until they reached open land to the east, and then stop for the night. Shay was still concerned about being caught in open country by the Skullbearers, but his growing dread of the swamp overshadowed even this fear, and his foremost thought was to get as far away as possible. The trio tightened the rope about their waists and in single file began to move along the uneven shoreline of the marsh, their eyes glued to the faint path ahead. Menyon guided them cautiously, avoiding the tangle of treacherous roots and weeds that grew in abundance along the swamp's edge, their twisted, knotted forms seemingly alive in the eerie half-light of the rolling gray mist. At times the ground became soft mud, dangerously like that of the marsh itself, and had to be skirted. At other times huge trees blocked the path, their great trunks leaning heavily toward the dull, lifeless surface of the swamp's waters, their branches drooping sadly, motionless as they waited for the death that lay only inches below. If the lowlands of Cleet had been a dying land, then this marsh was the death that waited. An infinite, ageless death that gave no sign, no warning, no movement as it crouched, concealed within the very land it had so brutally destroyed. The chilling dampness of the lowlands was here, but coupled with it was the unexplainable feeling that the heavy, stagnant slime of the swamp waters permeated the mist as well, clutching eagerly at the weary travelers. The mist about them swirled slowly, but there was no sign of wind, no sound of a breeze rustling the tall swamp grass or dying oaks. All was still, a silence of permanent death that knew well who was master. They had walked for perhaps an hour when Shay first sensed that something was wrong. There was no reason for the feeling. It stole over him gradually until every sense was keyed, trying to find where the trouble lay. Walking silently between the other two, he listened intently, peering first into the great oaks, then out over the swamp. Finally, he concluded with chilling certainty that they were not alone, that something else was out there in the invisible beyond, lost in the mist to their poor vision, but able to see them. For one brief moment, the young Veilman was so terrified by the thought that he was unable to speak or even to gesture. He could only walk ahead, his mind frozen, waiting for the unspeakable to happen. But then, with a supreme effort, he calmed his scattered thoughts and brought the other two men to an abrupt halt. Menyon looked around quizzically and started to speak, but Shay silenced him with a finger to his own lips and a gesture toward the swamp. Flick was already looking cautiously in that direction, his own sixth sense having warned him of his brother's fear. For long moments they stood motionless at the edge of the marsh, their eyes and ears concentrated on the impenetrable mist moving sluggishly above the surface of the dead water. The silence was oppressive.
"I think you were mistaken," Menyon whispered finally as he relaxed his vigil. "Sometimes when you are this tired, it is easy to imagine things."
Shay shook his head negatively and looked at Flick.
"I don't know," the other conceded. "I thought I sensed something."
"A mist wraith," chided Menyon, grinning.
"Maybe you're right," Shay interceded quickly. "I am pretty tired and could imagine anything at this point. Let's keep moving and get out of this place."
They hastily resumed the dreary trek, but for the next few minutes remained alert for anything unusual. When nothing happened, they began to let their thoughts drift to other matters. Shay had just succeeded in convincing himself that he had been mistaken and the victim of an overactive imagination brought about by lack of sleep, when Flick cried out. Immediately Shay felt the rope that bound them together jerk sharply and begin to drag him in the direction of the deadly swamp. He lost his balance and fell, unable to distinguish anything in the mist. For one fleeting moment he thought he glimpsed his brother's body suspended several feet in the air over the swamp, the rope still tied to his waist. In the next second, Shay felt the chill of the swamp grapple at his legs. They might have all been lost had it not been for the quick reflexes of the Prince of Lee. At the first sharp jerk of the rope, he had instinctively grasped at the only thing near enough to keep him on his feet. It was a huge, sinking oak, its trunk embedded so far into the soft ground that its upper branches were within reach, and Minion rapidly hooked one arm about the nearest bough, and with the other grasped the rope about his waist and tried to pull back. Shay, now up to his knees in the swamp mud, felt the rope go taut on Minion's end and tried to brace himself to aid. Flick was crying out sharply in the darkness above the swamp, and both Minion and Shay shouted encouragement. Suddenly, the rope between Flick and Shay went slack, and out of the gray mistiness emerged the stout, struggling form of Flick Ohmsford, still suspended above the water's surface, his waist gripped by what appeared to be a sort of greenish, weed-coated tentacle. His right hand held the long, silver dagger, which gleamed menacingly as it slashed in repeated cuts at the thing which held him. Shay yanked hard on the rope which bound them, trying to aid his brother in breaking free, and a moment later he succeeded as the tentacle whipped back into the mist, releasing the still struggling Flick, who promptly fell into the marsh below. Shay had barely pulled his exhausted brother from the clutches of the swamp, freed him from the rope, and helped him to his feet before several more of the greenish arms shot out of the misty darkness. They knocked the shaken Flick sprawling, and one closed about the left arm of an astonished Shay before he could think to dodge. He felt himself drawn toward the swamp and drew his own dagger to strike fiercely at the slime-covered tentacle. As he fought, he caught sight of something huge out in the marsh, its bulk covered by the night and the swamp. To one side, Flick again became entangled in the grip of two more tentacles, and his stocky form was dragged relentlessly toward the water's edge. Valiantly, Shay broke free from the tentacle that held his arm, slashing through the repulsive limb with one great cut. Struggling to reach his brother, he felt another tentacle grasp his leg, knocking his feet out from under him. As he fell, his head struck an oak root, and he lost consciousness. Again they were saved by Minion, his lithe form leaping out of the darkness behind, the great sword flashing dully in a wide arc as it severed in one powerful swing the tentacle which held the unconscious Shay. A second later the Highlander was at Flick's side, cutting and chopping his way past the arms which suddenly reached for him out of the darkness, and with a series of quick, well-placed blows freed the other Veilman. For a moment the tentacles disappeared back into the mist of the swamp, and Flick and Minion hastened to pull the unconscious Shay back from the unprotected edge of the water. But before any of them could reach the safety of the great oaks, the greenish arms again shot out of the darkness. Without hesitation, Minion and Flick placed themselves in front of their motionless friend and struck out at the encircling arms. The fight was silent, save for the labored breathing of the men as they struck again and again, chopping off bits and pieces and sometimes whole ends of the grasping tentacles. But any damage they caused did not seem to affect the monster in the swamp, which attacked with renewed fury at each stroke. Minion cursed himself for not remembering to drag the great ash bow within reach so that he might have taken a shot at whatever it was that lay beyond the mist. "Shay!" he yelled desperately. "Shay, wake up, or for the love of heaven, we're done for!" The silent form behind him stirred slightly. "Get up, Shay!" pleaded Flick hoarsely, his own arms exhausted from the great strain of fighting off the tentacles. "The stones!" yelled Minion. "Get the elf stones!" Shay struggled to a kneeling position, but he was knocked flat again by the force of the battle in front of him. He heard Minion shouting and dazedly felt for his pack, realizing almost immediately that he had dropped it while helping Flick. He saw it now, several yards to the right, the tentacles waving menacingly over it. Minion seemed to realize this at the same moment and charged forward with a wild cry, his long sword cutting a path for the others. Flick was at his side, the small dagger still in his hand. With a final surge of his fading strength, Shay leaped to his feet and launched himself toward the pack containing the precious elf stones. His slim form slipped between several of the grasping arms, and he threw himself on the pack. His hand was inside, groping for the pouch, when the first tentacle reached his unprotected legs. Kicking and struggling, he fought to keep his freedom for the few seconds he needed to find the stones. For a moment he thought he had lost them again. Then his hand closed over the small pouch, and he yanked it from his fallen pack. A sudden blow from the writhing tentacles almost caused him to drop it, and he clutched it tightly to his chest as he loosened the drawstrings with numbing slowness. Flick had been forced back so far that he stumbled against Shay's outstretched body and fell over backward, the tentacles coming down on top of them both. Now only the lean form of Minion stood between them and the giant attacker, both hands gripping tightly the great sword of Lee. Almost without realizing it, Shay found the three blue stones in his hand, free from the pouch at last. Scrambling backward, struggling to his feet, the young Veilman let out a wild cry of triumph and held forth the faintly glowing elf stones. The power locked within flared up immediately, flooding the darkness with dazzling blue light. Flick and Minion leaped back, shielding their eyes from the glare. The tentacles drew back hesitantly, uncertainly, and as the three men risked a second quick glance, they saw the brilliant light of the elf stones streak outward into the mist above the swamp, cutting through its vapor with the keenness of a knife. They saw it strike with shattering impact the huge, unspeakable bulk that had attacked them as it was sinking sluggishly beneath the slime-covered waters. At that same instant, the glare above the disappearing monster reached the intensity of a small sun, and the water steamed with blue flames that seared upward into the shrouded sky. One moment, the burning glare and the flames were there, and the next, they were gone. The mist and the night returned, and the three companions were alone again in the blackness of the marshland. They quickly sheathed their weapons, picked up the fallen packs, and dropped back among the huge black oaks. The swamp remained as silent as it had been before the unexpected attack, its dull waters disturbingly placid beneath the gray haze. For several moments, no one spoke as they collapsed silently against the trunks of the great trees and breathed deeply, grateful to be alive. The whole battle had happened quickly, like the passing of a brief, horrible instant in an all-too-real nightmare. Flick was completely drenched by the swamp waters, and Shay was soaked from the waist down. Both shivered in the chill night air. After only a few seconds of rest, they began moving slowly about in an effort to ward off the numbing cold. Realizing that they had to get free of the marshland quickly, Minion swung his tired body away from its resting place against the rough, bark-covered oak trunk, and in one smooth motion swung his pack into place over his shoulders. Shay and Flick were quick to follow, though somewhat less eager. They conferred briefly to decide what direction it would be best to take now. The choice was simple. Proceed through the black oaks and risk becoming lost and being set upon by the wandering wolf packs, or follow the edge of the swamp and chance a second encounter with the mist wraith. Neither choice held much appeal, but the battle with the creature from the mist marsh was too recent to permit any of them to risk a repeat performance. So the decision was made to stick to the woods, to try to follow a course parallel to the shoreline of the swamp, and hopefully gain the open country beyond within a few hours. They now had reached the point where the long hours of traveling with the keen anticipation of danger had chipped and worn away the clear reasoning of the morning. They were tired and frightened by the strange world into which they had journeyed, and the one clear thought left in their numbed minds
was to break through this stifling forest that they might find a few hours of welcome sleep. With that dominating their thoughts and overriding the caution that was so desperately needed, they forgot to tie themselves together again. The journey continued as before, with Menyon in the lead, Shay a few paces back, and Flick trailing, all walking silently and steadily, their minds fixed on the reassuring thought that ahead lay the sunlit, open grasslands that would take them to the Anar. The mist seemed to have dissipated slightly, and while Menyon's form was only a shadow, Shay could make him out well enough to follow. Yet at times both Shay and Flick would lose sight of the person immediately in front and would find their eyes straining wearily to keep to the path Menyon was making for them. The minutes passed with agonizing slowness, and the sharpness of each man's eyesight began to lessen with the increasing need for sleep. Minutes lengthened into long, endless hours, and still they plodded slowly onward through the misty haze of the great black oaks. They found it impossible to tell how far they had traveled or how much time had passed. Soon, it failed to matter at all. They became sleepwalkers in a world of half-dreams and rambling thoughts, with no break in the wearing march or the never-ending silent black trunks that came and passed in countless thousands. The only change was a gradual building of the wind from somewhere in the shrouded night, whispering its first faint cry, then growing to a numbing crescendo of sound that gripped the tired minds of the three travelers with spellbinding magic. It called to them, reminding them of the briefness of the days behind and those ahead, warning them that they were mortal creatures of no consequence in that land, crying to them to lie down in the peacefulness of sleep. They heard and fought against the tempting plea with the last of their strength, concentrating mindlessly on putting one foot before the other in an endless succession of footsteps. One minute, they were all there in a ragged line. The next, Shay looked ahead, and Menyon was gone. At first, he could not accept the fact. His normally keen mind hazy with lack of sleep, and he continued to walk slowly ahead, looking vainly for the shadowy form of the tall Highlander. Then abruptly he stopped as he realized, with stabbing fear, that they had somehow become separated. He clutched wildly for Flick and grabbed his brother's loose tunic as the fatigued Veilman stumbled into him, dead on his feet. Flick looked unthinkingly at him, not knowing, not even caring why they had stopped, his only hope that he could collapse at last and sleep. The wind in the darkness of the forest seemed to howl in wild glee, and Shay called desperately for the Highland Prince and heard only the echoes of his own futile cry. He called again and again, his voice rising to a near scream of desperation and fear, but nothing came back except the sound of his own voice, muffled and distorted by the wild whistling of the wind through the great oaks, whisking and wrapping about the silent trunks and limbs, and filtering out among the rustling leaves. Once he thought he heard his own name called. Answering eagerly, he dragged himself and the exhausted Flick through the maze of trees toward the sound of the cry. But there was nothing. Dropping to the forest floor, he called until his voice gave out, but only the wind replied in mocking laughter to tell him that he had lost the Prince of Lee. Chapter 7. When Shay awoke the following day, it was noon. The bright sunlight streamed into his half-open eyes with burning sharpness as he lay on his back in the tall grass. At first he could remember nothing of the previous night except that he and Flick had become separated from Menyon in the Black Oaks. Half awake, he raised himself on one elbow, looked about sleepily, and discovered that he was in an open field. Behind him rose the forbidding black oaks, and he knew that somehow, after losing Menyon, he had managed to find his way through the dread forest before collapsing in exhaustion. Everything was hazy in his mind after their separation. He could not imagine how he had summoned the strength to finish the march. He could not even recall breaking free of the endless forest to find the grass-covered lowlands he now surveyed. The whole experience seemed strangely distant as he rubbed his eyes and sighed contentedly in the warm sunlight and fresh air. For the first time in days, the Anar forests seemed to be within reach. Suddenly, he remembered Flick and looked anxiously about for his brother. A moment later, he spotted the stocky form collapsed in sleep several yards away. Shay climbed slowly to his feet and stretched leisurely, taking time to locate his pack. He bent down and rummaged through its contents until he located the pouch containing the elf stones, reassuring himself that they were still safely within his possession. Then, picking up the pack, he trudged over to his sleeping brother and gently shook him. Flick stirred grudgingly, clearly unhappy that anyone would disturb his slumber. Shay was forced to shake him several times before he at last reluctantly opened his eyes and squinted up sourly. Upon seeing Shay, he raised himself to a sitting position and looked slowly about.
"Hey, we made it," he exclaimed. "But I don't know how. I don't remember anything after losing Menyon except walking and walking until I thought that my legs would drop off."
Shay grinned in agreement and clapped his brother on the back. He felt a measure of gratitude when he thought of all they had been through together. So many hardships and dangers, and still Flick could laugh about it. He felt a sudden, keen sense of love for Flick, a brother who, while not related by blood, was even closer for his deep friendship. "We made it all right," he smiled, "and we'll make it the rest of the way, too, if I can get you off the ground." "The meanness in some people is unbelievable." Flick shook his head in mock disbelief, and then climbed heavily to his feet. He looked questioningly over at Shay. "Menyon? Lost. I don't know where." Flick looked away, sensing his brother's bitter disappointment, but unwilling to admit to himself that they were not better off without the Highland Prince. He instinctively distrusted Menyon, yet the Highlander had saved his life back in the forest, and that was not something Flick would forget easily. He thought about it a minute or so longer, then clapped his brother lightly on the shoulder.
"Don't worry about that rogue. He'll turn up. Probably at the wrong time."
Shay nodded quietly, and the conversation quickly turned to the task at hand. They agreed that the best plan was to journey northward until they reached the Silver River, which flowed into the Rainbow Lake, and follow it upstream to the Anar. With any luck, Menyon would also follow the river and catch up to them within a few days. His skill as a woodsman should enable him to escape the Black Oaks, and at some point beyond, find their trail and follow it to wherever they were. Shay was reluctant to leave his friend, but was wise enough to realize that any attempt at a search for him in the Black Oaks could only result in their own entanglement. Moreover, the danger they faced if discovered by the searching skull-bearers far outweighed any risks Menyon might encounter, even in that forest. There was nothing for them to do but to continue on. The pair walked rapidly through the green, quiet lowlands, hoping to reach the Silver River by nightfall. It was already mid-afternoon, and they had no way of knowing how far they might be from the river. With the sun to serve as a guide, they felt more confident of their position than they had in the misty confines of the Black Oaks, where they had been forced to depend on their own unreliable sense of direction. They talked freely, brightened by the sunlight that had been absent for so many days, and by an unspoken feeling of gratitude that they were still alive following the harrowing experiences of the Mistmarsh. As they walked, small animals and high-flying birds scattered at their appearance. Once, in the fading light of the afternoon sun, Shay thought he caught sight of the small, hunched-over form of an old man some distance to the east, moving slowly away from them. But in that light and at that distance, he could not be certain, and an instant later found he could see no one after all. Flick had seen nothing, and the incident was forgotten. By dusk, they sighted a long, ribbon-thin stream of water to the north, which they quickly identified as the fabled Silver River, the source of the wondrous Rainbow Lake to the west, and of a thousand firelight tales of adventure. It was said that there was a legendary king of the Silver River, whose wealth and power was beyond description, but whose only concern was in keeping the waters of the great river running free and clean for man and animal alike. He was seldom seen by travelers, the story is related, but he was always there to offer aid, should any require it, or to deal out punishment for violation of his domain. On sighting the river, Shay and Flick could only tell that it appeared very beautiful in the fading light, the sort of faint silver color that the name implied. When they finally reached its edge, the evening had become too dark to permit them to see how clear the waters really were, but upon tasting it, they found it clean enough to drink. They found a small, grass-covered clearing on the south bank of the river, beneath the spreading shelter of two broad, old maple trees that offered an ideal campsite for the night. Even the short journey of that afternoon had tired them, and they preferred not to risk moving about in the dark in this open country. They had just about exhausted their supplies, and after this evening's meal, they would have to hunt for food. This was a particularly disheartening thought when they recalled that the only weapons they had between them for killing game were the short and highly ineffectual hunting knives. Menyon carried the only long bow. They ate the last of their supplies in silence without the use of a cooking fire, which might have called attention to their presence. The moon was half full and the night cloudless, so that the thousands of stars in the limitless galaxy shone in dazzling white, lighting up the river and the land beyond in an eerie, deep green brightness. After their meal was completed, Shay turned to his brother. "Have you thought about this trip? About this whole business of running away?" he queried. "I mean, what are we really doing?" "You're a funny one to ask that," exclaimed the other shortly. Shay smiled and nodded. "I suppose I am. But I have to justify it all to myself, and that's not an easy task. I can understand most of what Alanon told us, about the dangers of the heirs of the sword. But what good will it do for us to hide out in the Anar? This creature Brona must be after something besides the Sword of Shannara to go to all this trouble to search for the heirs of the Elven House. What is it he wants? What could it be?" Flick shrugged and tossed a pebble into the swift current of the lapping river, his own mind muddled, unable to offer any sensible answer. "Maybe he wants to take over," he suggested vaguely. "Doesn't everyone who gets a little power, sooner or later?" "No doubt," agreed Shay uncertainly, thinking that this special form of greed had brought the races to where they were today, following the long, bitter wars that had nearly destroyed all life. But it had been years since the last war, and the appearance of separate and disassociated communities seemed to have provided a partial answer to the long quest for peace. He turned back to a watchful Flick. "What are we going to do once we get to where we're going?"
"Alanon will tell us," his brother answered hesitantly.
"Alanon can't tell us what to do forever," replied Shay quickly. "Besides, I'm still not convinced that he has told us the truth about himself." Flick nodded his agreement, thinking back to that first chilling encounter with the dark giant who had tossed him about like a rag doll. His behavior had always struck Flick as that of a man who was used to having his way, and having it when and how he chose. He shivered involuntarily, recalling his first near discovery by the shadowy skull-bearer, and found himself confronted with the fact that it was Alanon who had saved him.
"I'm not sure I want to know the truth about any of this. I'm not sure I would understand," Flick murmured softly.
Shay was startled by the comment, and turned back to the moonlit waters of the river.
We may be only little people to Al-Anon, he acknowledged, but from now on I don't move without a reason.
Maybe so, his brother's voice drifted up to him. But maybe...
His voice trailed off ominously into the quiet sounds of the night and the river, and Shay chose not to pursue the matter. Both lay back and were quickly asleep, their tired thoughts flowing sluggishly into the bright, colorful dreams of the momentary world of sleep. In that secure, drifting dimension of fantasy, their weary minds could relax, releasing the hidden fears of tomorrow to emerge in whatever form they wished. And there, in that most distant sanctuary for the human soul, be faced privately and overcome. But even with the reassuring sounds of life all about them, and the peaceful rushing of the gleaming silver river to soothe their cares, an inescapable, gnawing specter of apprehension wormed its stealthy way into their dream world, and there, in full view of the mind's eye, it perched and waited, smiling dully, hatefully, knowing well the limits of their endurance. Both sleepers tossed fitfully, unable to shake the presence of this frightening apparition entrenched deep within them, more thought than form. Perhaps it was that same shadow of warning, radiating its special scent of fear that locked simultaneously in the restless minds of the Veilmen, and caused both to waken in the same startled instant, the sleep gone from their eyes and the air filled with stark, chilling madness that gripped them tightly and began to squeeze. They recognized it instantly, and panic shone dully in their eyes as they sat motionless, listening to the soundless night. Moments passed, and nothing happened. Still they remained immobile, their senses straining for the sounds they knew must come. Then they heard the dreaded flapping of the great wings, and together looked to the open river to see the hulking, silent form of the skull-bearer swoop almost gracefully from out of the lowlands across the river to the north and settle into a long glide, bearing directly toward their place of concealment. The Veilmen were frozen with terror, unable even to think, let alone move, as they watched the creature begin to close the distance between them. It did not matter that it had not yet seen them, perhaps did not even know that they were there. It would know in the next few seconds, and for the brothers there was no time to run, no place to hide, no chance to escape. Shay felt the dryness of his mouth, and somewhere within his scattered thoughts remembered the elf stones. But his mind had gone numb. He sat paralyzed with his brother and waited for the end. Miraculously, it did not come. Just when it seemed that the servant of the warlock lord must surely find them, a flash of light from the other bank caught its attention. Swiftly it winged away toward the light, and then there was another, a bit farther down, and then another. Or was it mistaken? It flew swiftly now, searching eagerly, its cunning mind telling it that the search was at an end, the long hunt over at last. Yet it could not find the source of the light. Suddenly the light flashed again, only to disappear in the swiftness of a blinking eye. The maddened creature swooped toward it, knowing it was deeper in the blackness across the river, lost somewhere in the thousands of small gullies and dales of the lowlands. The mysterious light flashed again and then again, each time moving farther inland, taunting, daring the angered beast to follow. On the other bank, the petrified figures of the two Veilmen remained concealed in the darkness as their frightened eyes watched the flying shadow move ever more swiftly away from them until it could no longer be seen. They remained immobile after the departure of the Skullbearer. Once again, they had come close to death and managed to elude its fatal touch. They sat quietly and listened as the mingled sounds of insect and animal returned to the night. Minutes passed, and they began to breathe more easily, their stiff poses relaxing into more comfortable slumps as they looked at each other in amazed relief, knowing the creature had gone, but unable to comprehend how it had happened. Then,
before they had any chance at all to speak of the matter, the mysterious light that had flashed from across the river reappeared suddenly on a rise, several hundred yards in back of them, disappeared for an instant, and then flashed again, closer than before. Shay and Flick watched in wonderment as it moved toward them, weaving slightly. Moments later, the figure of an old, old man stood before them, bent with age and clothed in woodsman's garb, his hair silver in the starlight, his face framed by a long, white beard neatly trimmed and combed. The strange light in his hand appeared fiercely bright at this close distance, and there was no hint of a flame in its center. Suddenly it disappeared, and in its place was a cylindrical object gripped in the old man's gnarled hand. He looked at them and smiled a greeting. Shay looked quietly at his ancient face, sensing that the strange old man deserved his respect. "The light," Shay spoke finally. "How?"
"A toy of people long since dead and gone."
The voice rolled out in a steady whisper that drifted on the cool air.
"Gone like the evil creature out there."
The words trailed off, and he pointed in the direction of the departed skull-bearer with a thin, wrinkled arm that seemed to hang in the night like some brittle stick of dead wood. Shay looked doubtfully at him, unsure of what should be done next.
"We're traveling eastward," Flick volunteered abruptly.
"To the Anar."
The gentle voice cut him short, the elderly head nodding in understanding, the wrinkled eyes sharp in the soft moonlight as they looked from one brother to the other. Suddenly he moved past them to the edge of the swift river, and then turned back to them and motioned for them to sit. Shay and Flick did so without hesitation, unable to doubt the old man's intentions. As they sat, they felt a great weariness steal over their bodies, their eyes suddenly unable to remain open.
"Sleep, young travelers, that your journey may be shortened."
The voice became stronger in their minds, more commanding. They could not resist the feeling of weariness so pleasant and welcome, and they stretched out on the soft, grassy bank in obedience. The figure before them began to change slowly into something new, and through vague, blurred eyes and half-closed eyelids, it appeared that the old man was growing younger, and his clothes were not the same. Shay began to mutter slightly, trying to stay awake, to understand, but a moment later both Veilmen were asleep. As they slept, they drifted cloud-like through forgotten days of sunlight and happiness in the peaceful woodland home they had left so many days ago. Once again they roamed the friendly confines of the Dalm Forest and swam in the cool waters of the mighty Rappahalidran River, the fears and cares of a lifetime swept away in an instant. They moved through the wooded hills and vales of the countryside with freedom unlike anything they had ever experienced. In their sleep they touched, as if for the first time, each plant and animal, bird and insect, with new understanding of its importance as a living thing, however small and insignificant. They floated and drifted like the wind, able to smell the freshness of the land, able to see the beauty of the life nature had placed there. Everything was a kaleidoscope of color and smell, with only gentle sounds reaching their tired minds. Sounds of the open air and the quiet countryside. Forgotten were the long, hard days of travel through the mist-covered lowlands of Cleet, the sunless days where life was a lost soul wandering hopelessly in a dying land. Forgotten was the darkness of the black oaks, the madness of the endless giant trees hiding them from the sun and sky. Gone was the memory of the mist wraith and the pursuing skull-bearer, constant, relentless in its search. The young Veilmen moved in a world without the fears and cares of the real world, and for those hours, time dissipated into peace with the momentary beauty of a rainbow at the end of a sudden, violent storm. They did not know how long it was that they were lost to the world of dreams, nor did they know what it was that had happened to them in that time. They only knew, as they stirred into gentle wakefulness, that they were no longer at the edge of the Silver River. They knew as well that the time was new, and somehow different. The feeling was exciting, but very secure. As his vision slowly returned, Shay was aware that there were people all around him, watching and waiting. He raised himself slowly up on one elbow, his hazy vision disclosing groups of small figures standing about, bending over in an anxious manner. From out of the vague background emerged a tall, commanding figure in loose-fitting clothes, leaning down to him, a broad hand on his slim shoulder. "Flick?" he cried apprehensively, rubbing his sleep-filled eyes with one hand as he squinted to make out the features of the shrouded figure. "You're safe now, Shay." The deep voice seemed to roll out of the shadowy figure. "This is the Anar." Shay blinked quickly, struggling to rise as the broad hand held him gently down. His eyes began to clear, and he saw in a glimpse the half-raised figure of his brother next to him, just waking from his deep slumber. Around them were the squat, heavy-set figures of men Shay instantly knew to be dwarfs. Shay's eyes caught the strong face of the figure at his side, and at the moment they came to rest on the gleaming chainmail encasing the hand and forearm, stretched out to grasp his shoulder lightly, he knew the journey to the Anar was ended. They had found Cullhaven and Balinor. Minyan Lee had not found the last leg of the journey to the Anar quite so simple. When he first realized he had become separated from the two Vale men, panic set in. He was not afraid for himself, but he feared the very worst for the Ohmsfords if left alone to find their way out of the mist-shrouded Black Oaks. He, too, had called hopelessly, futilely, stumbling blindly about in the blackness until his voice was cracked. But in the end he was forced to admit to himself that the search was useless under such conditions. Exhausted, he pushed on through the woods in what he believed to be the general direction of the lowlands, consoling himself slightly with the promise that he would find the others in the daylight. He was in the forest a longer time than he had anticipated, breaking free near dawn and collapsing at the edge of the grasslands. Though he did not know it then, he had emerged at a point south of the sleeping brothers. By this time his endurance had been pushed to the limit, and sleep came over him so quickly that he could not remember anything after the slow, feather-light feeling of falling as he collapsed in the tall lowland grass. It seemed to him that he slept a very long time, but in fact he awakened only several hours after Shay and Flick had begun their journey toward the Silver River. Believing that he was a considerable distance south of the point the group had been making for while in the Black Oaks, Minyan quickly chose to travel north and try to cut across the trail of his companions before reaching the river. If he failed to find them by that time, he knew he would be confronted with the unpleasant probability that they were still lost in the entanglement of the woods. Hurriedly, the Highlander strapped on his light pack, shouldered the great ash bow and the sword of Lee, and began to march rapidly northward. The few hours of afternoon daylight remaining disappeared quickly as he walked, his sharp eyes searching carefully for any sign of human passage. It was almost dusk when he finally picked up the signs of someone traveling in the direction of the Silver River. He found the trail to be several hours old, and he could be reasonably certain that there was more than one person. But there was no way to tell who the travelers were, so Minyan pushed on hurriedly in the half-light of dusk, hoping to catch them when they stopped for the night. He knew that the Skull-Bearers would also be searching for them, but brushed his fears aside, remembering that there was no reason to connect him with the Vale Men. In any event, it was a calculated risk he had to take if he expected to be of any service to his friends.
Shortly thereafter, just before the sun dropped behind the horizon completely, Menyon caught sight of a figure to the east of him, traveling in the opposite direction. Menyon quickly called out to the other, who seemed startled by the Highlander's sudden appearance, and tried to move away from him. Menyon quickly took up the chase, running after the frightened traveler and calling to him that he meant no harm. After several minutes, he caught the man, who turned out to be a peddler selling cooking ware to outlying villages and families in these lowlands. The peddler, a bent, timid individual who had been frightened badly by the unexpected pursuit, was now thoroughly terrified by the sight of the tall, sword-bearing Highlander facing him at nightfall in the middle of nowhere. Menyon hastily explained that he meant no harm, but was looking for two friends from whom he had become separated while traveling through the Black Oaks. This proved to be the worst thing he could have told the little man, who was now thoroughly convinced the stranger was insane. Menyon considered telling him that he was the Prince of Lee, but quickly discarded that idea. In the end, the peddler revealed to him that he had seen two travelers fitting the general description of the Vale Men from a distance earlier in the afternoon. Menyon could not tell if the man had told him that much for fear of his life or to humor him, but he accepted the tale and bade good evening to the little man, who was obviously delighted to be let off so easily, and made a hasty escape southward into the sheltering darkness of evening. Menyon was forced to admit to himself that it was now too dark to attempt to follow the trail of his friends, so he cast about for a likely campsite. He found a pair of large pines that appeared to be the best shelter available, and he moved into them, glancing anxiously at the clear night sky. There was sufficient light to enable a prowling Northland creature to find any camped travelers with relative ease, and he inwardly prayed that his friends had sense enough to pick a carefully hidden spot to spend the night. He tossed down his own pack and weapons beneath one of the spreading pines and crawled under the shelter of its low-hanging branches. Famished from the past 2 days' journey, he devoured the last of his supplies, thinking as he did so that the Vale Men would be faced with the same food shortage in the days ahead. Grumbling aloud at the bad luck that had separated them, he reluctantly wrapped himself in his light blanket and was quickly asleep, the great sword of Lee unsheathed at his side, gleaming dully in the moonlight. Unaware of the events that had transpired that night while he slept soundly several miles south of the Silver River, Menyon Lee rose the next day with a new plan in mind. If he could cut across country, traveling northeast, he could catch up with the Vale Men much more easily. He was certain that they would be following the edge of the Silver River as it wound its way eastward into the Anar forests, so their paths had to cross farther upriver. Abandoning the faint traces of the trail left the previous day, Menyon began to journey across the lowlands in an easterly direction, thinking to himself that if he did not come across some sign of them upriver when he reached the water's edge, he could double back downstream. He also entertained hopes of sighting some small game that would provide meat for the evening meal. He whistled and sang to himself as he walked, his lean face relaxed and cheerful at the prospect of a reunion with his lost comrades. He could even picture the stolid disbelief on old Flick's stern face at the sight of his return. He walked easily with long, loping strides that covered the ground quickly and evenly, the swinging, measured step of the experienced woodsman and hunter. As he traveled, his thoughts drifted back to the events of the past several days, and he pondered the significance of all that had transpired. He knew little about the history of the great wars and the reign of the Druid Council, the mysterious appearance of the so-called warlock lord, and his defeat by the combined might of three nations. Most disturbing of all was his almost total lack of knowledge of the legend behind the Sword of Shannara, the fabled weapon that for so many years had been a watchword symbolic of freedom through courage. Now, it was the birthright of an unknown orphan, half man, half elf. The thought was so preposterous that he still found it impossible to conceive of Shay in that role. He knew instinctively that something was missing from the picture. Something so basic to the whole puzzle of the great sword that without knowing what it was, the three friends were so many wind-blown leaves. Menyon also knew that he was not a part of this adventure for the sake of friendship alone. Flick had been right about that. Even now he was unsure exactly why he had been persuaded to undertake this journey. He knew he was less than a Prince of Lee should be. He knew that his interest in people had not been deep enough, and he had never really wanted to know them. He had never tried to understand the important problems of governing justly in a society where the monarch's word was the only law. Yet he felt that in his own way, he was as good as any man alive. Shay believed he was a man to be looked up to. Perhaps so, he thought idly, but his life to date appeared to consist of one long line of harrowing experiences and wild escapades that had served little or no constructive purpose. The smooth, grass-covered lowlands changed to rough, barren ground, rising abruptly in small hills and dropping sharply into steep, trench-like valleys that made travel slow and almost hazardous in places. Menyon looked anxiously ahead for some indication of more level terrain, but it was impossible to see very far, even from the top of the steep rises. He plodded on, deliberately and steadily, ignoring the roughness of the ground and silently berating his decision to come that way. His mind wandered briefly, then suddenly snapped back as he caught the sound of a human voice. He listened intently for several seconds, but could hear nothing further, and dismissed it as the wind or his imagination. A moment later he heard it again, only this time it was the clear sound of a woman's voice, singing softly somewhere ahead of him, faint and low. He walked more quickly, wondering if his ears were playing tricks on him, but all the time hearing the woman's mellow voice grow louder. Soon the mesmeric sound of her singing filled the air in a gay, almost wild abandon that reached into the innermost depths of the Highlander's mind, bidding him to follow, to be as free as the song itself. Almost in a trance, he walked steadily on, smiling broadly at the images the happy song conjured up to him. Vaguely he wondered what a woman would be doing in these bleak lowlands, miles from any kind of civilization. But the song seemed to dispel all his doubts in its warm assurance that it came from the heart. At the peak of a particularly bleak rise, somewhat higher than the surrounding hillocks, Menyon found her sitting beneath a small, twisted tree with long, gnarled branches that reminded him of willow roots. She was a young girl, very beautiful, and obviously very much at home in these lands as she sang brightly, seemingly oblivious to anyone who might be attracted by the sound of her voice. He did not conceal his approach, but moved straight to her side, smiling gently at her freshness and youth. She smiled back at him, but made no effort to rise nor to greet him, continuing the gay strains of the tune she had been singing all this time. The Prince of Lee came to a halt several feet away from her, but she quickly beckoned him to come closer and sit next to her beneath the odd-shaped tree. It was then that from somewhere deep within him a small warning nerve twinged. Some sixth sense not yet entranced by her vibrant song tugged at him and demanded to know why this young girl should ask a complete stranger to sit with her. There was no reason for his hesitation other than perhaps the innate distrust the hunter has for all things out of place and time in nature. But whatever the reason, it caused the Highlander to pause. In that instant, the girl and the song disappeared into vapor, leaving Menyon to face the strange-looking tree on the barren rise. For 1 second, Menyon hesitated, unable to believe what had just occurred, and then hastily moved to withdraw.
but the loose ground about his feet opened even as he paused, releasing a heavy cluster of thick, gnarled roots which wound themselves tightly about the young man's ankles, holding him fast. Menyon stumbled over backward, trying to break free. For a moment he found his predicament to be ludicrous. But try as he might, he could not work free of those clinging roots. The strangeness of the situation increased almost immediately as he glanced up to see the strange root-limbed tree, previously immobile, approaching in a slow, stretching motion, its limbs extended toward him, their tips containing small but deadly-looking needles. Thoroughly aroused now, Menyon dropped his pack and bow in one motion and unsheathed the great sword, realizing that the girl and the song had been an illusion to draw him within reach of this ominous tree. He cut briefly at the roots which bound him, severing them in places, but the work was slow because they were wound so tightly about his ankles that he could not risk broad strokes. Sudden panic set in as he realized he could not get free in time, but he forced the feeling down and shouted his defiance at the plant, which by now was almost on top of him. Swinging in fury as it came within reach, he quickly severed a number of the clutching limbs and it withdrew slightly, its whole frame shuddering in pain. Menyon knew that with its next approach he had to strike its nerve center if he expected to destroy it. But the strange tree had other ideas. Coiling its limbs into itself, it thrust them toward the imprisoned traveler one at a time, showering him with the tiny needles that flew off the ends. Many of them missed altogether, and some bounced harmlessly off his heavy tunic and boots. But others struck the exposed skin of his hands and head and embedded themselves with small, stinging sensations. Menyon tried to brush them off, while protecting himself from further assault, but the little needles broke off, leaving their tips embedded in his skin. He felt a kind of slow drowsiness begin to steal over him, and portions of his nervous system begin to go numb. He realized at once that the needles contained some sort of drug that was designed to put the plant's victim to sleep, to render it helpless for easy disposition. Wildly he fought the feeling seeping through his system, but soon dropped helplessly to his knees, unable to fight it, knowing that the tree had won. But amazingly, the deadly tree appeared to hesitate, and then to inch slightly backward, coiling again in attack. Slow, heavy footsteps sounded behind the fallen prince, approaching cautiously. He could not turn his head to see who it was, and a deep bass voice warned him abruptly to remain motionless. The tree coiled expectantly to strike, but an instant before it released its deadly needles, it was struck with shattering impact by a huge mace that flew over the shoulder of the fallen minion. The strange tree was completely toppled by the blow. Obviously injured, it struggled to raise itself and fight back. Behind him, Menyon heard the sharp release of a bowstring and a long black arrow